Hello, Nashville. Yes. You're looking good, Nashville. Especially you, I must say. Great to be back here. And just 1 year after the floods, that floated little Jimmy Dickens all the way down to Rattle and Snap. Where his wife, for all her problems, fished him out. After all those jokes, all those years. Well, what do you know?
Welcome to an encore performance of Michael Feldman's What Do You Know? From Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. Hey, I'm Sarah Nix. That's John Tulin on the piano, Jeff Hammond on bass, Clyde Stubblefield on drums, with Jim Packard announcing. In this hour of What Do You Know, we're off to Nashville, Tennessee for a Music City edition of All the News That Isn't, plus legendary singer-songwriter Rodney Crowell and the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know comes from PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Now, the man who, unlike Brad Paisley, actually wears them, Michael Feldman.
I got a wardrobe filled with Brad Paisley's from the 70s.
From the 70s.
Oh, yeah. It's the last time I wore them, actually, though. You're looking good, Nashville. Nice to see y'all. All y'all. Whatever. Take your preference there. Especially, you know, after all you've gone through the past year, the flooding and everything. But, you know, heck, we all have water lines. Hello, is this on? just a year ago, actually. And it was bad. Everybody was wearing their Dolly Partons, not just her. So bad that the Confederate gallery there at the Ryman was a Confederate pond for a while, and that was a little weird. Kind of cool having the dolphins at Opryland, though. You know? Schermerhorn flooded, and so they put on South Pacific, because, you know, that gives you lemons and lemonade and so forth. At the Frist, they had the Art of Atlantis. Al Gore's place just floated off like an ark after Al collected two of every kind of masseuse. No, whatever, you know. So bad at frog jump, the frog fell in. That's how bad it was. And, you know, all of it, which is, you know, the worst part was that all of it was ignored by the national media that was obsessed with Tiger Woods' escapades and Brett Favre's P-mail. So that's what really bugs me about the whole thing. Is looking kind of scary in Memphis right now, not to make light of flooding and the devastation it causes. So our hearts and our hopes are out with them and hoping that comes through good. So the headline, you know, the state is always very helpful. Tennessee officials say, stay out of floodwaters. So that's reassuring, of course, everyone. Right? That's like saying, you know, headline saying, put safety on before shoving pistol in pants. Anyways, Nashville has rose again. It's great to be back in Music City. Thank you all for having us. I love this town. And in all the Music City and Tennessee news that isn't, the Titans missed out on Cam Newton, but Fig's still available. Steve McNair is keeping his phone unplugged, I want you to know, so don't try calling him. Brett Favre was seen down at Prince's Hot Chicken, though, so he could be fishing for a job here in Titans. And actually, no, the Predators, you know, Ryan Suter from Madison, Wisconsin, ladies and gentlemen. Back in Madison, could throw a ball pretty good, too, so just keep that in mind, you know, if you need, we'll be off-season for him. This Jack Locker, is that the guy they drafted?
Jake
Locker, yeah, Jake Locker. He was just baptized at Baptist Sports Park, I saw. So if no NFL season this year, he will start for the Baptists. As a matter of fact, the auditions for Titans cheerleaders coming up on Mother's Day. So, you know, those are the prelims at Baptist Park once again. In front of little Jimmy Dickens, he's going to pick him. Well, the prelims are at Baptist Sports Park and the finals are at Wild Horse Saloon. So that's just... which is, you know, just a snapshot of Nashville right there. In other news, a new movie came out, Blindside 2, in which Leanne goes out cruising for volunteers for Tennessee. No, they'll be back this year. I know they will. In other Nashville and Tennessee news, Dollar General fields a 99-cent NASCAR car. Kyle Busch has agreed to drive just for the 99-cent can of slightly dented turtle wax. Thank you, Jim, for that. Turtles, appreciate that sniff of appreciation. In a compromise on Tennessee intelligent design law, chimps will be allowed to teach science. A good solution, I think. A new bill will allow college faculty to carry a guy from Kentucky with them at all times. He, of course, will have the weapons. So the tax on sugary beverages drives scores of Tennesseans north to the sour mash. The Tennessee House has approved a 9-month waiting period for abortions. Some very clever laws coming out of Tennessee, that seems to me. Governor Haslam signs the first major piece of legislation of his administration. We're talking legacy here. It is the self-storage lien law. So when he looks back on his year or two as governor, he'll say, what about that self-storage lien law there? That allows them to email your delinquency notice instead of delivering it by certified mail, which is $5.15. Okay. In other news, middle and grade school teachers are forbidden to use the G word, golly. And Gaylord Opryland is now known as Lord Opryland. Lord Opryland. Sounds good, too. We've got to stay within the family life program, despite all we know about family life, I guess. In other news still, used TVA nuke rods turn up at the flea market in Bell Buckle. A steal at 50 cents each. There's an opening for a lesbian soccer coach at Belmont University. Well, they have really a great lesbian soccer team, by the way. So. To lessen traffic noise at the I-65 Rosa Parks exit in Salem Town, TDOT has posted exit in neutral sign. So try and remember that. It's going to be hard to remember that. The TDOT study of Apollo Drive finds that residents are knocking down their own mailboxes. It's not a traffic problem at all. Meigs County displays the Reagan 11th commandment in the courthouse, thou shalt not speak ill of fellow Republicans. That's up there. So they got 10 plus the one. Racing will move from the state fairgrounds to the Capitol grounds, where they're used to running around in circles to banshee wails. Oh, that's not an editorial. That's just descriptive. Vince Young traded for Robert Young and Loretta Young, and a Young to be named later. Although no one asks, Senator Bob Corker says he's not running for president. Unless it's for Dollar General. Six former Nashville cops run for Metro Council on the Donut Den ticket. The judge is that a pistol under your robe or are you happy to see me, Bill, advances. Frank, you know, with mostly judges, I'm glad it's just a gun under his robe, to tell you the truth. Tennessee Senate okays school voucher program, but you need a whole lot of them to get something good. That's the thing. They're like green stamps, really. You got it. Facebook avatars okayed as voter ID. Bible experts agree that selling wine at Publix would be the opening of the seventh seal of the apocalypse. Publix actually is mentioned in Deuteronomy. I've seen it in there. Check for yourself. Nashville, again, will be celebrating both sides of the Civil War because they're no fool, ladies and gentlemen. Kenny Chesney has a 3D movie coming out, and Dolly's got a triple D. Billy Ray Cyrus has been siring children left and right trying to score again with another winner. So far, no luck. It's a little achy-breaky behind. It keeps going. Blake Shelton, in more trouble after remaking From a Jack to a Queen. That's a much better joke than that. God, come on. All right, maybe not. Shania marries her ex-husband's mistress's ex-husband. Pretty much shutting her out of the Grand Ole Opry for all time. Because I don't think little Jimmy Dickens can even apologize for that one. Wife jokes, yes. You know. The Music City Bowl, people still not real happy about having Franklin American Mortgage in front of their name. Well, Franklin American Mortgage Bowl, really, just, you know, you can understand that. Realtors are coming down trying to flip the stadium for quick cash. So. And finally, Prince's Hot Chicken Shack gets first 100% restaurant score because, friends, nothing can survive that. That's all the news. That is it from Music City and Tennessee. Thank you so much. Thank you very much. Very kind of you. You want to go through any of those individually? And I can explain them. Maybe not. Actually, inexplicable. Jim last night at Opryland, the Grand Ole Opry, did some announcing down there.
Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice.
And thanks to them.
Got a plaque and everything. Yes, they're great. And the boys in the band, Clyde played out there, and Jeff was out there. And and thanks for not mentioning me at all, Jim, in your speech. Because, you know, I don't like the attention.
I know you don't.
I don't like the attention. Well, you know, and actually, I did have a little song. If they were going to ask me to get up and sing, because usually they make people who don't sing at all get up there so they can just embarrass the hell out of them, really, in front of all these tremendous country players and stuff. And I had a. And I actually had written a song, and I was. Well. I haven't finished it yet. I haven't finished it yet, but it goes like, the hills and the hollers, the general dollars. Is that heaven or Nashville, I see?
Good start.
That's a good start. Yeah. Maybe this man can help me work my way out of that song. He is he's the greatest. Rodney Crowell is going to join us right now. He's got a book out, China Berry Sidewalks, about his Texas youth. Pre-Nashville, takes us right up to Nashville. Would you welcome, please, Rodney Crowell. China berries. That's where your mom planted those China berries, right?
She and I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did they grow, or are they?
One of them.
How many did you start with?
Well, I was an only child, and. We planted three chinaberry trees in this very small front yard, and we named them J.W. after my father, Cosette after my mother, and Rodney. And Rodney was the only one who survived.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And cool. Until just a few years ago, and I actually went back to East Houston there where this house had fallen down, but somebody had built a house. It's now a Spanish neighborhood there. Mm-hmm. So I went and knocked on the door, and I had this record called the Houston Kid out in I was showing it to this man who didn't speak English, and I was showing him my picture, you know, as my credentials, and I said, I used to live here. I planted that chinaberry tree, and he's looking at me, and he said, yeah, shade. I said, don't cut it down. Don't ever cut this tree down. And he goes, shade. So I went back a couple of years later, and there's a stump.
Ah. Oh.
But the good news is, you know, sometimes the stump, you see these little sprigs.
They'll grow, yeah.
Yeah, coming back out. So someone recently suggested I go in the night and cut off one of those sprigs and plant it in Tennessee and see if a chinaberry tree will grow in Tennessee.
Yeah. That could work. And this book, Chinaberry Sidewalks, is a great book, by the way. Did it take you a long time to write this?
Yeah, it took me 10 years.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Because it's so well written that you must have crafted, like, every sentence that went into it.
It took me 7 years to figure out how to write.
Oh. The first seven were just figuring out how to write.
Well, you know, writing songs is my basic instinct. Yeah. And as when I was writing that book, the first thing, I didn't want to write a book about my career. I figured that would be boring and who cares.
Oh.
But I thought if I could somehow teach myself to write like a real writer, that I might have a chance of drawing some attention to the book. So that was my goal. And so I wasn't going to be able to do that in a year or two or 3 years.
No. How did you approach that, learning the craft or crafting the craft?
Well, once I discovered revision.
The eraser's a handy tool.
Delete is a very handy tool. Yeah. Actually, a writer friend of mine who I'm very close to, she read the first 30 pages that I had back when I had 250 pages, and she said, "Hey, you write better than my graduate students. Give me 250 pages, and I'll cut it down to 50 for you." And I'm thinking, oh, I have 250 pages. So I said, well, if she's going to cut it down to 50, I better start thinking about how I would cut it down to 50.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a real eye-opener.
Or cut it down to three verses and a kicker at the end.
Exactly.
Did you find, now, as a songwriter, is there any relationship between writing a song lyric and writing a book?
No.
I mean, it's not really. Huh?
Not really. Only just the work ethic.
Yeah.
You know, because as a songwriter, I have a really good work ethic. I work every day if I'm not on the road. So getting up and, you know, every writer I've ever talked to, it's like, it's your job. You get up and you go to work.
Yeah.
But, you know, a song like You Are My Sunshine or, you know, Like a Bird on a Wire, those big old metaphors that make such great songs, you know, when on the page they start to look like a big sore thumb, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So when my editor, all of this brilliant metaphor that I had written, when it came back with lines drawn through it, I thought, okay, I hear.
Yeah.
Okay, I can wean myself off of showing off.
Yeah. I've found that, and I've written a couple of books, but they're supposed to be funny. So you write stuff, when you do your best job, you give it to the editor or whatever, and it comes back marginally, you know, the margins there. Is this funny? You know, obviously I thought so. Maybe you're right. You know, I don't know. You know, so that kind of thing can be actually kind of.
Yeah.
Because they don't do that with your song lyrics, right? I mean, you don't have to submit. If you've written a.
Probably, you know, I should, but I don't.
like Sex and Gasoline, you know. What can be better? You know, that's like the best title of all time. You know, what else is there? There's nothing.
Well, that's what I was saying.
Yeah.
You know, give me something else.
Why would you want it? More sex and cheaper gasoline, you know. But that's great. But, and so you sit down every morning, you write
when I'm home. Yes.
When you do, yeah. And
you've done that. It's my job.
Yeah. Did that start back in the China Berry sidewalks? In Houston.
I'm sorry.
Back in Houston, or
did I start the book back in Houston?
No. Started the songwriting.
Yes, it did. In terms of, I've always said that my mother and father were the perfect conduit for me to be a songwriter, because my father was sort of a savant about remembering songs. He didn't write songs, but if he heard a song once, he could remember it and sing it, and he knew thousands of songs, it seemed like to me. And then my mother was a storyteller, just constantly telling and retelling stories until she perfected, you know, maybe sometimes deleting the truth out of them in order to make a better story.
Sure, you got to.
But she was a very good storyteller, and had she been educated, I'm sure she would have been a writer.
Yeah.
So between those two, it was sort of
inevitable,
preordained that I would be a songwriter.
She was illiterate when he was the musician.
Well, she wasn't illiterate. She was very illiterate, seventh grade education.
But I mean, she was literate in her
but
very
But words were a gift to her.
Yeah, right. Spoken language. It all begins at spoken language anyway. All this stuff.
Yeah.
And having something to tell, having a story to tell.
True.
And that's certainly what all your songs are about. And
it's all storytelling, isn't it?
Yeah. Like She Loves the Jerk, something like that. You know? You know there's a story there. I know you're married.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's hard to kiss the lips at night to chew your ass out all day long.
Yeah, I know. I think you're the best titleist, if nothing in all of music. Because you know that's amazing, and of course Sex and Gasoline. And you know, other thing I was curious when Jimmy Reed, you say it as an early influence. I love Jimmy Reed.
I love Jimmy Reed.
Yeah.
Still do.
Yeah.
Love his records. What I love about Jimmy Reed's records is his wife, I don't remember know her name, but she always sat just a little bit off mic and would feed the words to him as he was recording. It was so in the moment.
Yeah.
And if you listen close to his records, you can hear her going, you know, take out some insurance. Take out some insurance on me, baby.
Right, she'd be the one who wanted it.
Baby, what you want me to do? Baby, what you want me to do? God, I wish my wife would go around with me and feed me lines like that.
She's probably asking to take out insurance, but, you know, I don't know.
Yes.
And where is he from, Jimmy Reed?
Jimmy Reed, I'm pretty sure, I would guess, Louisiana somewhere. He sounds like he's from Louisiana. He's from some swamp.
Yeah.
And you don't slur your words like that unless you grew up in a swamp.
Yeah. But on the other hand, he invented his own musical form. Is there any music that really sounds like Jimmy Reed? I mean, he sort of invented a new... It's kind of a talking country blues
thing. Well, you can go back to Mississippi. I mean, there, you know, some of the early blues guys out of Mississippi, you know, you know that Jimmy Reed heard them, and that was... It all came out of Mississippi.
Yeah. But he took it to a new place, which you do as well, I think, in your music.
Mm, thank you.
And it's marvelous. And I mean, do you consider yourself at all? They have this, you know, there's country and there's alt country, whatever they call it, alternative country. You sort of were like a breakthrough in that area, don't you think? I mean, you took country music and all the traditions there, but you took it to a sort of a different place. A little franker, maybe, and a little revelatory, a little more.
No, I can't. Yeah. You know, no, I can't claim that I took it anywhere. If anything. Maybe production-wise a little bit, but you know there was Roger Miller doing "Dang Me" and "King of the Road," which is like, if you think that is beautiful use of the English language, and if you take Johnny Cash back to 5 Feet High and Rising, go to Hank Williams, and the songs that he wrote and sang were so natural, it was as if they had just grown out of the earth. These songs,
that's true.
The way they sounded come from him to me. That's revolutionary and breakthrough. And then you got to go back to Jimmie Rodgers, the singing brakeman, and the Carter family. And, there's been breakthroughs, but I don't think any artist serves the process by claiming that they've done anything more than the Carter family or Hank Williams or Johnny Cash did.
Yeah. When I was a kid in Milwaukee in my bedroom, I would listen to the Hank Williams, and he broke through at that time. That was probably in the 60s, some point, and it was on the General, played everywhere. I hear that lonesome whistle, and there was a train not too far from my house, and I totally thought I was him, and this is me, a kid in Milwaukee, and I'm Hank Williams, But that's sort of the effect that music.
Good for you.
but the music seems so personal. A great song that you think that's your experience that's happening. True. It sounds like your experience.
In my book, there's actually my second memory in life is my father took me to see Hank Williams. The next to last performance of his career, it was December 14th, 1952, and I was born in August of 1950. So my father took me and he had me on his shoulders, and I remember the sound, and I remember a little bit of light, but what I remember so clearly about being up on his shoulders in this sort of Quonset hut building was this eddy of cool air brushing my cheek. It sort of woke me up. I remember a light bulb before that, just in this room, but then my father reinforced the memory by telling me over and over and over again, like a mantra, he says, "Don't ever forget I took you to see the Hillbilly Shakespeare." So I reconstructed the memory based on that little eddy of cool air and my father's constantly reminding me that this is my gift to you, son.
Mm-hmm. What song was that in? Did you put that into a particular song?
It's in the book.
Yeah. Okay.
That's okay that you didn't read it.
No, I did. I thought there was a song. I did, actually.
Okay.
I read this. Look, I wrote things on here. I can show you.
Okay. All right, let's see.
I made a few corrections, and I didn't.
Show your radio audience.
Where did I write? Here, see, look. The Rolling Tones.
Yeah, the Rolling Tones.
Yeah.
That was my first band, the Rolling Tones.
The Rolling Tones, see?
Now, see,
you think I didn't read it?
That was revolutionary.
How'd they do? Pretty good. Was that back in high school? Or?
I think we made it through two gigs.
Yeah.
But the Rolling Tones were the kind of band who went on stage and then argued about which order to play the five songs we knew. And that was the show, you know.
Was there a point in you in your youthful musical life where you were thinking rock and roll, country?
Oh, are you kidding?
Yeah.
I was thinking girls.
Yeah. Rhonda.
Which is rock and roll. It doesn't matter what kind of music
what
it is.
What it takes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like any musician, any male musician, and I would hope that female musicians are the same. Any male musician who says they didn't get into the business and practice and get good for any other reason than to get a girl is lying.
Yeah. I've always felt that true.
It's true.
And I resent it because no one goes for a quiz show master. Say, wow, what do I have to do? A quiz show master, you know, quiz master. Absolutely nothing.
You just need to make it swing.
Yeah, yeah. I see you have your guitar with you.
I do.
And were you?
Indeed.
And there's a mic pointed at it. I noticed that.
I was invited to bring this guitar. I just want you to know I'm not forcing this.
No, no, I was hoping.
Nor your audience.
Would you feel like, in fact, playing something?
I would.
Yes.
In fact, this is a song actually from the Sex and Gasoline album. I don't like hummus. I hate long lines, nosy neighbors, and Venetian blinds. Chirpy news anchors alter my mood. I'm offended by buzzwords like awesome and dude. I look like a train wreck. I feel like a blah till you get to know me. You may think I'm a snob, but I'm closer to heaven than I've ever been. I don't eat sushi. I don't smoke grass. I don't wear pajamas. I don't drive fast. I hate idle gossip and tasseled shoes. Slick politicians give me the blues. I don't ride in limos and I can't play golf. I don't own a rifle that will blow your head off. But I'm closer to heaven than I've ever been. I'm riding that way from cradle to grave. I'm my hands on a wheel. I love my friends. I love my wife. And four little babies are the light of my life. I love Sissy Spacek. I love Guy Clark. All the biscuits and gravy I can eat with a fork. I don't want to be famous. Who gives a damn? I just want to be happy, whoever I am. And I'm closer to heaven than I've ever been. I'm closer to heaven
Well, it was beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And the only song that has rhymed, Guy Clark and Fork.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us, Rodney.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure to meet
My
you.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Rodney Crowell, ladies and gentlemen. Rodney Crowell. And the book is China Berry Sidewalks. So get it, read it. I read it. I did read it. I wrote all kinds of things. I'm trying to show them everything I wrote. Excellent. Rodney Crowell. A treat to have him here. Hey, y'all. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah. Good to see you. You're looking all spruced up. Did you get a haircut recently or something?
No.
No?
Yeah, I did.
It looks quite short. Either that or it's falling out rapidly.
It's falling out.
Yeah. So, okay, here. Nice piano. What is that you're sitting at there? That's very ornate.
It's a Steinway. It's just an older... Yeah.
French provincial Steinway.
French provincial, yeah.
Yeah, very nice. Right? I don't know what this... See this thing back here? This rabbi on a zebra.
Oh, yeah, that's a little scary.
I don't know what that is. I'm sure it's in my honor, but I'm a little...
Somebody's going to present that to you a little later in the show.
Okay. So what you got for us here?
This is a little Herbie Hancock tune called And What If I Don't?
All right, sounds good. What do you know, trio?
Once again, Michael Feldman.
All right. I'm going to try jumping down. Yes, I'm going to do it. Can you? We're at beautiful TPAC in Nashville, Tennessee, ladies and gentlemen, where you have to jump from the stage to get in. This is all right if you're a country star and people like you, they'll catch you, you know, but... Oh, I did. Okay. That was very exciting for a moment there. Hi, how are you?
Great.
If I would have sprawled over you, would that have made your day or what?
Oh, totally. Masters.
You love Quizman?
Yeah.
You weren't supposed to exist. You're unique.
I am unique, I guess.
Do you follow other ones besides?
Oh, no. Just you.
There aren't that many, really, when you think about it.
True.
A lot more quiz masters, but they've sort of they don't reproduce, so they
just haven't found the right girl, I guess.
And your name is
Kathy.
Kathy, and are you going to school here, Kathy? You're working?
I live here.
You live here? Okay. Yeah. That doesn't really answer the question, but I mean, you could be going to school and still live here, you know.
I'm not going to school.
Working?
No.
Thinking about either one, or
I've raised a
time to make your move is what I'm trying to say.
I've raised a family, and so now I'm in retirement, I guess.
Now you're through with everything, right? That was your job. You did it, and I'm glad it's done, and now looking for...
Reason.
Yeah. Well, can we help you with any counseling or intervention? Or I'm a little worried about you now.
Well, no, I'm an empty nester, and life is great.
How do you spend all your empty nest time, then? You're not feathering another nest, are you?
No, definitely not. I volunteer and, you know, just have lunch and...
You volunteer and have lunch. What a wonderful life.
It is it's a wonderful life.
Thank you, dear, very much. Thank you for coming here.
Thank you for
coming. Let's have lunch and let's volunteer or something. I have never volunteered. That's why I can't live in Tennessee. I've never volunteered for anything in my life. Something about, you know, I've been pushed into things and I've done them. And later on, I think, well, I'm glad I did that. But for some reason, I can't volunteer. Melissa Etheridge is here. No. Yes. Melissa Etheridge. Yes, she's a seventh grade language arts teacher in Murfreesboro. Right? Is that right? Yes. Where is Melissa? Huh? Hi, Melissa Etheridge, ladies and gentlemen. They say we don't have the big stars. We do. Apparently she's left performing and has gone into a middle school language arts work here. How are you?
I'm just fine, thank you.
Yeah. Excellent, excellent. Off the road now?
I am, yes. I'm at my other job now.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
Seventh grade language arts. What is language arts? I know I took it at one point.
It's reading in English.
Okay. Why do they call it language arts? It's like, what is social studies? I never figured out.
Well, because
what is citizenship? I mean, I don't understand any of these things. What is hygiene? We had to take hygiene. They never told us what it was, really. You know, we had like a retired Phi Ed teacher, woman, ancient woman in my school, teaching us hygiene. And I was like using a washcloth or something. I don't know. Why is that hygiene?
I can answer the language arts question.
All right, I'm sorry. What's that?
Well, writing is an art. Oh. And so you must.
Not the way I do it.
Well, to an English teacher, it's an art.
Not to my English teachers, it was. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm giving you a hard time.
You're very good at it.
I try. I got in a lot of trouble in school for, you know, back talking.
Is that what you remember from middle school?
You know, we didn't have middle. We had junior high school. You know, you graduated, you went from junior high school to high school. We didn't have middle school. Sounds weird to me anyway.
Well.
Middle of what?
It is weird.
Middle of hygiene? I'll tell you what was the weirdest thing that you asked, you know, what do you remember from the weirdest thing in junior high school was back in the day in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the boys had to swim nude. It was a Germanic thing, apparently. Teutonic, you know, a German town and everything. And I guess they did that back in Berlin. And they still do. Are you from Berlin?
No.
From Germany?
I've been to Germany, and my husband warned me about going to the pool at the hotel because a lot of the people swim nude there.
Okay. See? Something I said is verified as being true. So that's not, yeah, I remember that. I never learned the back float. As a result of that, yes. You can imagine, you know, middle, that age, you know.
That would be horrible in middle school to have to swim naked. That would be horrible.
Not a good thing. Thank you, Melissa. Very nice to meet you.
Thank you.
What's your school called?
Siegel Middle in Murfreesboro.
All right, great. Great school. Thank you, dear. Nice to have you here. Whoop. I'm falling over my own feet. That's a reassuring thing. Have you visited the... What? Parthenon, yes. It's Drew Fuller, is that right?
Yes.
Where are you, Drew? Hi, Drew. Everyone's sitting way in back. Yes, the Parthenon. I didn't see it this time, but I saw it last time. Yeah, yeah. No, stand up, say hello. This is Drew, everyone. Come on, stand up. Stand up. We're close personal friends, Drew and I.
I haven't seen you since I came to Madison to see you.
Yeah. We have an Athens there, actually. It's a restaurant. It's a Greek restaurant. And they have various reproductions of the Parthenon and the Acropolis in there. But this is the... And I remember it looking very familiar when I first saw it. I thought, I've seen this building before somewhere.
There it was. We have the only one in Nashville. It's in ruins elsewhere.
Yes. It's in much better shape than the one in Athens. What, Jim? What is it?
It's time to play the quiz, Mike.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to snap at you. Ever since I gave him that basketball horn, you know, he's been using it. Can you tell me this? So why is the Parthenon here? I've never quite understood why the Parthenon is in Nashville.
We had it for a World's Fair some time ago, before me.
Well, that was not that long ago then. See how it did that? That was pretty good. Thank you, dear.
Very good.
Very nice to meet you. Okay, we're going to play the What Do You Know quiz because that's what we do, us quiz masters. That's why we're so desirable as human beings, because we're always having quizzes. Before we can do it, we have to know who can and cannot participate in that quiz. So the gentleman that who has that, if you could come down here, and I'll just pass the time here. And we have lots of things. Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Thank you. What are you doing these days?
I'm a Vanderbilt nurse.
Vanderbilt nurse.
I am.
A nurse at Vanderbilt?
Yes, that's correct.
Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, excuse me, I have to talk to this gentleman here for a second.
I'd talk to her.
Huh?
I would talk to her.
You're right. You know, so you're a Vanderbilt nurse. What are your hours then, I'm wondering?
Well, I'm working extensively right now in the Vanderbilt Cosmetic Surgery Clinic. So,
cosmetic surgery?
Well, yes, sir.
We could talk about something. I don't need too much. A little lift, a little tuck.
We'll take good care of you.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. Very nice. Okay. Yes. Oh, you're taking a picture before you get, just... You're supposed to read these darn things.
Hi.
What's your name?
My name is Scott Mumford.
Scott, and you're from around here?
I am. I live in East Nashville.
East Nashville.
Yeah!
Right. Would you do the honors, please? You want to hold this? Or you,
Sure.
Okay. Want me to hold your phone? That's pretty expensive.
I swiped it this morning.
Okay. All right.
Okay. These are the four disclaimers. All questions used on What Do You Know have been painstakingly researched, although the answers have not. Ambiguous, misleading, or poorly worded questions are par for the course. Listeners who are sticklers for the truth should get their own shows. I said sticklers.
You said sticklers.
I got nervous for a second.
No, you're fine.
Because I'm working on my shyness. So you think Brett Favre should come back with the Titans?
You're welcome.
I sense there's a consensus on that. Persons employed by the International House of Radio or its member stations are lucky to be working at all, let alone tying up the office phones trying to play the quiz. Listeners who have won recently should sit on their hands and let someone else have a chance for a change. I should have brought my stronger glasses. Sometimes I stack them up. All opinions expressed on What Do You Know are well-reasoned and insightful. Needless to say, they are not those of the International House of Radio, its member station, or lackeys. Anyone else who says otherwise is looking for a fight.
Yeah. Take all that with you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Well done. Let's see the hands of those of you who want to try the math, the quiz, chance to win fabulous prizes simply for being fabulous. You seem the most enthusiastic. Come on down here, dear. Let's see if you qualify for the quiz that no one has ever not qualified for. I think the odds are in your favor. How are you, dear?
I'm doing lovely. Thank you.
You are?
Julie Brimer.
Julie, are you from here?
I grew up in Sparta, Tennessee, and I've been living in Nashville for about 8 years.
Julie, give me one good reason you should play this quiz.
I need to have my geekiness validated.
Needs to be validated. You're not geeky at all, Julie. Oh, yeah, come on down here. That qualifies. I told you it would. Just step up here. Be careful. Okay. Walk this way, if you would. Join us here. Yes, give her a little support. There you go. Yes. And you are additionally mic'd there. Rodney left his mic there.
Oh, good. Everybody can hear my stomach grumble.
The guitar. Yes, you can hear your stomach or whatever you want to do down there. Will be picked up on mic. So, all right. Julie, right?
Yes, write my name down so you don't forget, J-U-L-I-E.
Yeah, okay. Oh, I like that spelling of it. How are you?
I'm just so proud to be here. I'm like Sarah Cannon.
Yeah? So how? What are you doing these days? Working? Or you?
Sure thing. I graduated from Tennessee State University last May.
Great.
And they're right down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And I work at Medical Reimbursements of America.
Medical reimbursements.
Indeed.
That's a good thing, to get reimbursed for medicals.
That's what we try to do. We try to make sure the hospitals are paid properly when there's been an auto accident or a slip and fall. We work with the health insurance. We work with auto insurance to make sure the hospital gets reimbursed. And also that the patient doesn't have this outstanding bill.
Yes. Boy, you're really into this job. This is good. They're lucky to have you, dear.
Thank you.
Yes. Personal life, how's that going?
My husband is just a lovely person. He's at home with his mom because it's Mother's Day weekend, and I'm going to join them as soon as I leave.
Yeah. Oh, that's sweet. What are you going to do with mom?
I think I'm going to buy her a nice orchid to wear to church.
An orchid for you or for her?
You know, I may go crazy and buy two.
I think it'd be a good idea, actually, now that you mention it. Julie, someone out there plays along with you. Jim Packard, how do they do that?
This is an encore performance of What Do You Know, so don't call now. Keep the number for next week.
The Grand Ole Opry is the longest-running radio show in history ever. And I want to know, What Do You Know has been on, you know, pretty long, too, for 25 years. The question is, how much longer has the world's longest-running radio show, the Grand Ole Opry, been on then what do you know? If you don't give us a call, within how many years, Jim?
We're going to need it right on the head.
Okay. Well, you're getting tough. So ever since you were on the Opry stage there, you've toughened up.
I heard the answer last night.
Yeah, okay. All right, if you don't give us a call here, how much longer? As the world's longest radio show, the Grand Ole Opry, been running, then what do you know? And what do you know? I will tell you it's been like 25 years now, so it's quite an achievement.
Major achievement.
Yeah. Oh, thank you very much. Yes, Sarah's on the line from Cedar Falls, Iowa.
What? Hello.
Hi.
I called on a whim.
You did?
Yeah, this is crazy. I'm giggling a lot. And actually, I'm from Dubuque, Iowa. I was in Cedar Falls to drop off my husband to hang out with his mother, and then I'm down to Marshalltown to see my mom. So I'm en route all day.
Okay, anything else you want to tell us about your schedule or your day?
No. Nope.
All right. And so, Sarah, the Grand Ole Opry has been on the air how much longer than what do you know at 25 years?
Goodness.
Would you have?
Grand Ole Opry.
Yeah.
Are you going to give me some options, or am I just
No. You've got enough options in your day.
I'm going with 53 more years.
How many?
53.
53?
Yep.
Can we round up 53?
We can
up?
Round out.
We can round up?
Yeah.
To 60 or so?
To 60.
Jim says we can round up. That's right, 60 years more. They've been on for 85 years, 86 years, actually. But we'll round up even more. Congratulations, Sarah. That's amazing.
Thank you.
You do that. Are you driving as we speak?
Yeah, I'm going to pull over, I think.
Yeah, we're going to pull over somewhere in Cedar Falls or wherever you are now. You didn't have a Bloody Mary or something before you got in the vehicle, did you?
No, Sarah, I'm just so shocked that I actually called and made it. That's hilarious.
You're a very good-humored person, I have to say that, especially with the busy schedule that you have right now. Sarah, this is Julie. She's your partner.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Julie. How you doing?
Are you parked
just
now?
Great.
Are you safe?
I am parked. I'm actually in Iowa Tradition Park between a bunch of silos.
Wonderful. I like the setting. Okay, two of you work together as a team. Jim Packard, what are those categories?
Categories are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science, or odds and ends.
Okay, Sarah, pick the first category, if you would.
Odds and ends.
Odds and ends could be anything. Let's see if it is. Whose driveway is in the shape of a guitar? Little Jimmy Dickens or Andrew Jackson's?
I have been to the Hermitage. I ought to know this.
Yes. Did you notice a guitar-shaped driveway?
It's the Hermitage.
Oh, she says it's the Hermitage, Sarah?
I'm going to go with her.
Yes, it is. I don't know what little Jimmy Dickens has got there. But he's on the lawnmower so much, you can't tell.
One right and no wrong.
Okay. What's left there, Jimmy?
Current events, people, places, school, or science.
Julie?
Things I should have learned in school.
Things you should learn in school. All right. Name one exact copy of the Choragic Monument of Lysicrates, formerly in Athens, that is nearby.
Well, I believe that would be the Parthenon.
Well, think this over now. It's even closer than that.
Read the question again. Let's be clear.
I can't read it. I couldn't read it the first time. Name one exact copy of the Choragic Monument of Lysicrates, formerly found only in Athens, that is nearby. It's actually part of a well-known building nearby, but it's an exact duplicate of what they used to call a lantern on a building, as opposed to, let's say, a dome on a building.
Well, we do have a copy of the Parthenon here in Nashville.
We do, yes.
With a statue of Athena inside.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not it, though.
Not it,
God. Sarah, any idea where you might find this exact copy of the Choragic Monument of Lysicrates?
Oh, I got nothing.
Okay. It's on the state capitol. The top of the state capitol there is an exact duplicate of that lantern, they call it, from it. Don't worry about it. That would be
one right and one wrong.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what's left there, Jim?
Current events, people, places, or science?
Okay. Sarah?
Science.
Science it is. Okay. Anything moving in the silos yet?
Nope, just cars are behind me, but it's fine.
Okay, a Vanderbilt researcher won a genius grant, Ken Cantania, for figuring out it takes a star-nosed mole 25, 10, or 5 milliseconds to decide if an insect is edible. Genius grant.
Oh. Moles know their nose, so I'm going to go with 5.
Indeed, it's very fast.
Or 25 milliseconds, or 10, or 5. That's the total range.
They're fast. It's 5.
I think he was saying that it wasn't fine.
Well, no, I mean, any of these seem pretty faster than I could certainly just decide if I wanted to eat an insect.
Do you want to go in the middle and try 10?
Or 25 mil. You know, 25 milliseconds is 25,000th of a second, isn't it? That's not
slow.
Well, the
audience is saying 25, Sarah. You want to
25 is right, yes. Okay.
Two right, one wrong.
Yeah, what's left there, Jim?
Current events, people, or places?
Julie?
Places.
Places could be anywhere. Let's see where it is.
The Malibu.
The Malibu of Tennessee. It's been called the Malibu of Tennessee. Is it Franklin, Glimp, or Craggy Hope?
You're from Malibu. Tennessee.
Okay, Sarah. Franklin is a kind of posh.
Well, Glimp is nothing to sneeze at.
Area.
Okay.
Read the choices again. Just
yes, Franklin, Glimp, or Craggy Hope, the Malibu of Tennessee. Which
Craggy
do you think?
Craggy Hope. I mean, you would think that it'd be somewhere near the water.
Sure.
Well, Franklin has a river. Yeah. Let's go with Franklin.
Franklin, she says.
Okay. Yep.
Sir? Yes, Franklin it is, the Malibu of Tennessee, and so nearby. How convenient. Congratulations.
Sarah, your prize package begins with bacon, bacon bandages, floss, three kinds of country smoked bacon, piggy popcorn, and piggy pecans in a basket from Nashville's Loveless Cafe. Find something in pearls with a generous certificate from Cindy David Designs Jewelry from Danker and Danker Public Relations. Cook up some cornbread in a mini guitar skillet using winning recipes in the National Cornbread Festival, both from Lodge Cast Iron. Listen to the hot tunes on Eileen Carey CD and wear an Out with a Girl's t-shirt, both from Eileen Carey. For you, Julie, you're going to see David Gray in concert at the Grand Ole Opry. Indulge in an assortment of fine chocolates and artisan desserts. Experience the creation of perfect eyebrow shapes. Experience some Formaggio's cheddar pesto cheese rounds from Cafe Nona and Nona's Gourmet Foods. And read Hat Show Print, the history of a great American poster shop, a Nashville tradition for over 35 years. Congratulations to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back to an encore presentation of Michael Feldman's What Do You Know? From Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI Public Radio International. I'm Sarah Nix, that's John Tooling on piano, Jeff Hammond on bass, Clyde Stubblefield on drums, with Jim Packard announcing. In this hour of What Do You Know, we head back to Andrew Jackson Hall in Nashville, Tennessee, for music from the Alison Brown Quartet, a chat with local author Adam Ross, and another round of the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know comes from PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Now, once again, it's Michael Feldman.
Thank you. And you know, each week at this time, I read an actual memo sent in by an actual listener. We have one here from Nashville, from the diocese, somewhere in Nashville. And it reads as follows: a nativity set donation, St. Blank Church, the church has been blanked out, as an older nativity set, which we would like to let diocesan organizations know is available. This is a donation, no cost. The set consists of a wooden stable, Holy Family, angel, a donkey, several sheep, three shepherds, and a cow. There are no kings or camels. If interested, please contact blank at blank church. Thank you so much for that memo. And I can fill in the blanks for you if you're interested in getting this slightly used nativity set, but there are no kings or camels. Either they kept those, did they keep the kings and the camels, or did the set not come with them? It must have come with kings and camels. You can't. What? What? They're still in the East. Okay. Everybody's a comedian except me. Why is that? Alison Brown is joining us now. She's fantastic. She is a kind of fused bluegrass and jazz and other things as well, Americana, if you want to call it that. She is a Grammy winner. For many years, actually, played with Alison Krauss in Union Station. To welcome, please, with the quartet, Alison Brown. Thank you. That was so cool. It was like being in a soundtrack. I felt like I was in the middle, like it was a soundtrack around me, to my life. Like it was a soundtrack of my life.
A soundtrack of your life.
Yeah, the opening of the, you know, like see the credits and.
Yeah, that's cool. It's kind of a Wisconsin.
But I got nothing to follow the opening. That's it. Very nice.
Thank you very much.
Wonderful. You want to introduce the quartet here? Let's find out who these.
Yeah, I would love to. From Shreveport, Louisiana, that's Jimmy Wallace playing the piano.
Yeah.
Back on the drums from Toronto, Canada, the most polite member of the band. That's Larry Adamaniuk. On the fiddle, he's on the faculty at Vanderbilt University at the Blair School of Music. That's Matt Combs.
Yeah.
And on the bass, co-founder of Compass Records, my husband and the best bass player in his price range. That's Gary West on the bass.
Yes. So now, is picking genetic for you? I mean, are you from a line of pickers? Or
No, I'm from a line of attorneys.
Attorneys. So something happened there. There was an advancement. There was some
it was
evolution.
A mutation, I think.
A mutation. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah. And is the secret to this now using the nylon strings?
No, actually, this is a steel string banjo.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. That's not the secret, then.
Yeah, that's not the secret.
Yeah.
The secret's just to keep moving these.
Yeah.
And just don't stop till you get to the end.
And to learn how to play it, I guess, would be the biggest secret.
Oh, that's one of the secrets, yeah.
Who did you learn from?
I grew up in La Jolla, California, near the Pacific Ocean. And so I learned from the folks out there. I learned a lot from John Hickman, Larry McNeely, but then all of us learned from Earl.
Yeah, of course. And
that's not Earl Clue.
No. The bluegrass, I mean, at first when people heard you, did they think you were taking liberties with the bluegrass tradition?
There could be some people that think that,
yeah.
But I actually have great reverence for the bluegrass tradition, although I have had people say, we don't appreciate you mocking the music.
Mocking the music?
But to me, you know, it's like the guys who created bluegrass music in 1945 were great innovators of their time. And so I think there's a lot of room for traditional music and for people to innovate at the fringe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally agree. It sounds fabulous.
Well, thank you. And it's like, how else are you going to get people to listen to the banjo? It's kind of like to bring it out of the holler and like more into the mainstream, you have to take certain liberties.
Yes. It sounds great. It works for you. Compass Records?
Yes, sir.
Still going strong?
Raw.
What's your latest?
Latest, Colin Hay, former Men at Work frontman, Gathering Mercury.
Yeah? Oh, is that right? How cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. So, you know, it's been an interesting pursuit because we really started the label to feature other people's music.
Mm-hmm.
And we're up to about 600 releases now. We have the largest Celtic catalog in the world here in Nashville, Tennessee.
Wow, fantastic.
So, yeah, it's awesome.
That's wonderful. And your latest, is it Stolen Moments was the most recent?
Most recent is called The Company You Keep.
The Company You Keep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can you do one more for us?
Have you got I suppose I could.
The wherewithal and the
yes,
time?
Sir.
Yes?
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much.
We'll send this tune out to all the moms in the audience. It's one called the Clean Plate Club. Thank you.
Allison Brown and the Quartet.
Keep on. Keep on.
We're still on?
Yep.
Oh, we are. Okay. Yeah, okay. Oh, that was great. Fantastic. Allison Brown. Check her out. Mr. Peanut is here with us. You can't say that every day. Adam Ross, you know, wrote for Nashville Scene for many years. And first-time novel. Okay, you know, get this. First novel you ever wrote shot to the top of the charts. Bestseller, instant hit everywhere, review, one of the best reviews I've ever seen in the New York Times Review of Books. He's here with us, Adam Ross, ladies and gentlemen. So did you, everyone has one novel in them, they say, but you're the only guy who's proved it.
Yeah. I think I may get out while I can.
Was this long in the making?
This novel actually took about 12 years to write.
12 years.
I was working full time, so that interfered with things a little bit.
Yeah, what were you working at?
Well, I started when we first moved to Nashville. I moved here from New York City with my wife, which was an adjustment.
The wife part or the?
It was an adjustment moving to Nashville from New York.
Okay.
Because you have to adjust to the way people are down here because they're aggressively nice. They're terrifyingly nice.
Why does that terrify you?
Well, I mean, New Yorkers get a bad rap. I think mostly they're too efficient and in a hurry to be nice. Mm-hmm. But why are they nice? They have time to be nice. It's so funny. My favorite story about this is my first week that I was here. My wife and I were driving down West End Avenue, and a guy in a pickup ahead of us, you'd never see this happen in New York, sticks his head out, and he goes, "Excuse me." He goes, "May I cut you off?" To which I said, "Sure, please, go ahead."
Really?
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, they asked before they carjacked it, too.
You don't see that at the Holland Tunnel.
Yeah.
But,
no, that is okay. So have you adjusted? Have you become increasingly nice? Since
it's funny. I have.
And has it hurt your style?
It's hurt my style in New York because now I'm walking down the streets of Manhattan and strangers will look at me. I go, "Hi."
I know. It's true though. Like, the first time I went to Manhattan, I made a point of looking everyone in the face, and no one would look back. No one catches your glance.
It's suddenly you're like Borat. You know, just
you don't
you've lost the ability to communicate. Yeah. But not here. No, yeah. It's pleasant.
Well, can you maintain an edge then as a writer? Because I mean, part of what of your writing is very is edgy and has niceness might smother that.
I've been married for 20 years, so.
Say no more.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now to dark things.
To dark things.
Yes.
Well, the novel. It's a funny look at wife killing. Like Hitchcock, you know. There's so much Hitchcock in here, and you know, I mean, wife abuse and all stuff. This is before there was wife abuse. Before in Hitchcock's days, it was just husband abuse, and this is all their mental.
It was just called marriage.
It was called marriage, and the husbands have these fantasies, sort of like this character in here, but it wasn't a serious attempt, but this sort of plays around with that whole notion on several different levels while throwing in all this Hitchcockian stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And what were you doing here with this?
Well, I mean, the story of how the novel was born is interesting. I started it in 1995, and in fact, my wife and I were living in New York at the time, and she was about to move us down to Nashville, where she was going to law school, which was probably why I was thinking about murder. But my father told me the story about the very suspicious suicide of our my second cousin, who struggled with a trifecta of illnesses. She was morbidly obese from a thyroid condition. She'd struggled with depression mightily all her life, and she had lethal tree nut allergies. And according to her husband, who was conveniently the only witness to her suicide, he claimed that he came home one afternoon. Mm-hmm. She was sitting at the kitchen table with a plate of peanuts. Mm-hmm. They got in a fight. Mm-hmm. She ate the peanuts and died of anaphylaxis right in front of him. He also claimed she hid her EpiPens. And sounded like the perfect murder to me.
Yeah. So the EpiPens are the things that you inject in yourself?
You inject yourself to get adrenaline and
yeah.
Recover from anaphylaxis.
Yeah.
And
well,
I
that's
know.
Word for word what's in your book here. So that really you didn't write this book.
No,
at
I mean
all.
I sat down after that. I sat down after that and wrote the first three chapters of the book in one sitting.
Yeah.
And then but I'd written myself into something I didn't understand fully, and from there it was a process of trying to figure out what the heck it was I had just put down.
Yeah. And then when did the game playing and the Hitchcockian thing, when did that settle in? Was that
partially that started from the beginning, because one of the original detectives was supposed to be a spoof on Lars Thorwald, the killer in Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window.
Lars. That's yes. Right. That's right.
Which is an anagram for Ward Hastrell, the name of the main detective.
Okay. The guy who buries a box in the little garden there.
He first chops up his wife.
Yeah. They think.
Which is not how I do it.
Yeah, yeah.
But
Mother's Day. This is nice.
Yes, but yeah. My wife is actually in the audience.
Yeah.
And I think after this interview, I should probably just stay up here with you. anyway, there was that element, and then
he was a wife killer too, wasn't he? That's right.
Yeah. So I just decided to start layering Hitchcock material in, because Hitchcock, if you look at his films, is obsessed with wife murder. Mm-hmm.
His TV show too.
And his TV show, you've got Vertigo. You've got Shadow of a Doubt. You've got Rear Window. You've got Strangers on a Train. They all, and that's just
Dial M for Murder.
Dial M for Murder.
Yeah.
Which is
Killing Grace Kelly.
There's a sick man.
Senseless
right?
crime.
What is wrong with that guy?
Yeah. Grace Kelly wasn't good enough for this guy. Right? For Ray Milland.
Nor for Jimmy Stewart in Rear Window.
Yeah.
What's he got against Grace?
Well, that's more Hitchcock that you have to look at his feeling about all these women.
That's true.
Attractive
that's true.
Women stuff. But you know, the thing interesting about him is that his wife ran his whole operation.
She did.
She did all the films and stuff. That was they all went through her.
That's true.
Yeah.
Although I will say it is sort of a sad thing. Apparently after Hitchcock's wife gave birth to their first child, he claimed that and he was not a skinny man himself, but he claimed that he was disgusted with her.
Oh.
Body change and would have nothing to do with her.
He should talk.
Carnally.
Well, I'm sorry that you even mentioned. Why did you bring that up even? That was before the age.
That's just how I roll.
Yeah. Not you, but why would he even say that? It's not like him to be that frank about it. And then the game playing thing here.
Well, the main character is a video game designer.
Yeah.
And he uses.
And so we don't know if we're actually in a video game.
You don't know. You don't know if you're reading what is an invention on the part of the video game designer, if this book he's writing is a fantasy, or if it's actually what happened. And so in some ways, the reader is put in the position of being a detective.
Yeah.
This is not a book for people who like their murder mysteries served up all nice and neat at the end. The reader has to make some choices, as we all do.
Yes, whether to read it or not.
whether to read it or not,
yeah.
or stay married or not, or to kill our spouses or not.
Yes. Did the editor ever say to you, enough with all these levels? Enough with the levels. Do you have problems selling this to...
Not selling
it so much, but...
No, he didn't. He never said that.
Yeah. Cool. Because he's had probably the same fantasies or something like that.
I don't know if he had the same fantasies as I did. I don't know if anybody has the same fantasies. I don't know if anyone's willing to admit they have the same fantasies as I did.
I think, I don't think just a male. I think every wife is certainly... My wife has indicated to me that she has, in fact, thought about...
How would she dispose of my body?
I mean, that, that's...
Hasn't anyone who's been married for a long time just wondered what... Not how to do it, but what if her plane went down. What?
Yeah.
What would I do with myself?
Yeah. If her brakes went out on the...
Yeah. Is the furnace working? Have we checked the carbon monoxide? Yeah.
And that's really what Hitchcock was all about. All those. My favorite of his was it was a TV show where the farmer kills his wife, puts her in the chicken feed, and then the sheriff comes out looking for her, and he serves him the chicken dinner, you know, with essence of wife in it. So I thought, it's a very sick and depressing thing if it's not funny to you, you know.
It is, although people are laughing, so they recognize what's going on.
Yeah. Were you at all surprised by the tremendous response you got? I mean, everyone likes to think they did a good job on a book or any project of theirs, but...
Yeah, I mean...
They love you everywhere. You were in Oxford. You killed in Oxford, Mississippi.
I killed in Oxford, Mississippi.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, no...
We won't even start about Great Britain, but we'll get
no,
that.
No, but Square Books is like...
Reading at Square Books was one of the great thrills of my life.
Where else?
And that was awesome. I'll tell you what I've been surprised by.
Yeah.
I have been surprised by the fact that everywhere I go, no matter where I read, everyone asks me the same thing, which is, what does your wife think of the book?
What does your wife think of the book?
She hasn't spoken to me since she read it.
Not true, of course. She realizes it. You're not...
No, she does.
Yes, yes, yes.
She does.
Exercise.
I hope. She likes the paperback more because it's easier to throw at me.
Yeah. You know, I mean, Tolstoy's wife would...
Because you're mad. Tolstoy's wife was strong.
Yeah.
Hurt!
You know, probably some of the same tensions, though, you know, for a while there, until you realize... you're on your next book. Your next book will be something entirely different, hopefully.
My next book is a children's book. No, it's... No.
About what to do with Junior? Is that...
How to Kill Your Parents.
Well, that's been done, hasn't it? I mean, that's been done to death, I think. That's right.
And then,
yeah. And now, you were an actor, though, right? Weren't you?
I was a child actor. I've tried to keep it under wraps. It was.
Because gosh darn it, you look familiar. I've never met you before.
I was I was a child actor. I was on radio.
Did you play a child, or were you actually a child?
I played many things. I was in The Seduction of Joe Tynan, which very few people, I'm sure, have seen, with Alan Alda and Meryl Streep.
No, I saw that.
Which was awesome because I got to miss a couple of months of school, which is just shows you how child actors think about things.
Yeah.
They're not like, I'll be famous. You're like, no school. You know, isn't it cool you're in a movie? No, I just don't have to go to math.
Yeah. Did you have a tutor following you around through your childhood?
I did, and she was actually from the South, and it was amazing. This was maybe a kind of a harbinger, but to get out of studying, I learned this early, because child actors are kind of precocious by nature, and I discovered that if I got her to talk about God, she would stop teaching.
We'd
be in the middle of fractions, and I'd say, tell me about Jesus. And she'd say, this is important. And I'll tell you, I worked it for a month, which is why I turned out to be a writer.
Was it a dead end after the child acting days, or could you not make it as an adult actor?
I didn't.
Stymied?
I mean, honestly, I didn't try. It was really something I fell into. My father was a career actor.
Mm-hmm.
And
who's your dad?
Well, his name's Howard Ross. Mm-hmm. He was in a lot of Broadway musicals. He started as an opera singer. Although it's funny, he does a lot of commercial voiceovers. Uh-huh. So you hear his voice over the time, all the time. And I always fear that his voice will outlive him. Mm-hmm. You know, that if you know, down the road I'm with my kids and you know, we're just sitting around the radio or the TV and we hear Egyptian navigators love emerald nuts. And I'll
that
say,
was him, huh?
I'll say, that was your grandpa. Listen.
He's trying to tell you something.
Yeah, back to nuts.
All comes back to nuts. So, but you didn't, the bug never bit you for running.
No, it didn't. I just didn't. It was just something I did. It got in the way of normal high school things. After a while, it got in the way of wrestling. It got in the way of deep meditative study of fractions that I didn't learn with my religious tutor. I mean, I just.
Yeah. And then the writing part of it. You studied writing in college.
I really caught the writing bug when I was at Vassar. And
that's a girls' school, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
It is. In fact, my wife and I met at an all-women's college, at Hollins College, where they admitted just a few men into the writing program.
Token male? Were you the token male? Or no?
I'm the token genius to think of that one, to come up and go to an all-women's college. You know, you're much more attractive on the Amazon island when you're the only guy around, let me tell you. Suddenly you're, you know.
More power to you. So then Vassar, and then did you go
Vassar, to Hollins, then yeah. My wife and I went to St. Louis. I was at WashU, and then boom, she dragged us here, and we've been here ever since.
Yeah.
Nashville is a great, great town. When I was an editor at the Nashville Scene, we had this annual contest, You Are So Nashville If. And my favorite You Are So Nashville If is, you are so Nashville if you never thought you'd stay here so long.
There you go. And getting back to Mr. Peanut for a second.
I know, I should be plugging my book. What am I talking about?
I know, that was good. The Sam Shepard thing. There are Sam Shepard fanatics out there, I presume.
There are.
People who lived and died Sam Shepard.
Right.
You must have heard from a lot of them, because he's a character in your book. He's like the third rung of this.
He's the second of the two detectives. He's the second, and really next to the main character's marriage, the most amount of space is dedicated to the Sam Shepard murder case. That of course is the case that the fugitive was,
right,
or the fugitive was thought to be based on.
Yeah.
But in the Shepard case, you know, you have a character who again may or may not have killed his wife. He was tried in the winter of 1954 for the brutal slaying of his wife, Marilyn, who he'd been high school sweethearts with, spent 10 years in prison until a young upstart attorney in his 20s by the name of F. Lee Bailey argued his case all the way to the Supreme Court, got it thrown out. The state of Ohio retried him, and he was found not guilty. So he's the only man in America that I can tell that was by trial, tried, convicted, tried, exonerated of killing his wife. He got it both ways. but he's a central character in a lot of ways, mainly because so many of the struggles that modern marriage is still plagued by, so many of the things that make modern marriage dynamic really began in 1954, which is also the summer, by the way, that Hitchcock's Rear Window came out, mm-hmm. which explains part of the Hitchcockian element in the book. But I mean, it was the first time you saw this major influx of women into the workforce, where men and women were spending their freshest hours of the day together with people other than their spouses. And so some of those tensions, I think, are still very much a part of things we deal with today.
But he was not, in fact, an investigator or a...
No, he's transported by way of David's video game, just like dragons are in Donkey Kong.
Okay.
You know, I mean, it's, right. You know...
That explains that.
Yeah.
And Mr. Peanut, soon to be a major motion picture.
If someone in the audience will make it, please make it. Yes. Yes. We've had some interesting nibbles.
I think more than that, I would think.
So it's been very exciting.
Not optioned out yet?
Not optioned out.
Okay. All right. You heard it here. Everyone wants to make an offer here. Got the man right here. Adam, thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you so much.
Great talking to you. Love the book. It's Mr. Peanut. Get it and read it. Adam Ross, ladies and gentlemen. Who loves his wife? It's literature. All right, then. Thank you very much. Okay, and we should introduce our trio here, because people may not know who the trio is.
Go ahead.
Who the trio am? What is it, singular or plural? We got the stand-up bass fellow here. What about this Jeff, who's been entertaining us in our off minutes here? Jeff Hammond, our bass player, and the funky drummer, ladies and gentlemen. the one and only Clyde Stubblefield at the sticks. And, of course, John Tulane, your host.
Once again, Michael Feldman. You can jump that way.
Okay. I'm going to jump down this side of Tupac. Gather me up. Parts you can find. Oh, yeah. Wasn't so bad. Trail Music City is home to famous musicians and radio programs. What would your disc jockey name be? I'm not sure about mine. I can tell you Jim Packard's radio name. This is not his original radio name, is it?
No, it's not.
All right. What is it, Jim?
James St. John.
James St. John. I think you should go back to that. That's a very cool name. Bottle or breast? Who's asking? Joe Little. Okay, Joe, for you, I got no answer. Hi, Joe. What? Huh? No. Joe? Oh, Joe, okay. Joe, I don't know what there's no context here. So I don't know exactly what you're implying or inferring.
Well, I'm a pediatrician, so, you know. Yeah.
Okay, then.
So it's the eternal question.
Not just some schlub on the street who's going
to...
Coming up to ask you. Bottle or breast?
Yes,
you know, you get that all the time.
You might.
Yeah, are you asking if I?
Yeah, well...
Who remembers? Well, this was many years ago before they had either, I think. I don't think... When my mother had me, I don't think there was any... I don't think there were either option.
Romulus or Remus? I don't know. I mean, certainly...
Your point is well taken. Thank you. I wish you were my pediatrician, but I'm too old. Okay. No, I think, you know, whatever works. Whatever gets you through the night, you know, as we say in the baby business, they're all good. Peter Bird, Nashville. Do we have to now worry about zombie bin laden? Okay. Can't do much for that, but I'll just move on then. Derek Riley. What else should I do today after this show to celebrate my bachelor party? This is part of your bachelor party? That is really sad. That is so sad. I don't think I'm going to be able to recover from this. I mean, how many bachelor parties do you have? Certainly no more than two or three in your whole life. And this is what you do for your bachelor party? Is this it here?
Yeah, yeah. These guys came from all over the country to come here. For my bachelor party, yeah. I just found out about it this morning now. So I was just coming out to breakfast, and then they all showed up. So
this is not the extent. Whose idea was this of you guys?
Mine.
What was the thinking there?
Well, he loves your show, and so that's actually the one way that we got him here. That's the one way that we were able to get him into the whole ruse.
It was sex and gasoline.
The promise of sex and gasoline. We didn't come through on that either, though, did we? I mean, he has a few more hours left as a single man, and you take him to a quiz show on a Saturday morning. I don't know. But you seem thrilled about it.
Yeah, I was pretty excited. I actually grew up in Wisconsin, so I grew up listening to the show. And yeah.
Whereabouts?
I grew up in Onalaska, actually. So, yep. Yeah, so.
That would be a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
From Onalaska, then that's a different story entirely.
Yeah, hopefully my parents are listening, and I want to wish Happy Mother's Day to all my mom and grandma.
And from here, where does the party go? Who's organizing this?
We haven't figured that out yet.
You're just going to take it?
They won't tell me, so.
Yeah, they shouldn't have told you about this. Right? Yeah. They did. I guess they did. Thank Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to play another round of the What Do You Know quiz. Because that's what we do, and that's what we're all about. So if you would like to try your hand at the quiz, and you didn't get a chance the first time, and you think you ought to get a chance this time, and then... Now, see, this gentleman is not leaping out of his seat. He has a quiet dignity about him, sir. Look at this dignity. You don't get dignity like this every day. And let's appreciate a little quiet dignity for change. Oh, don't say anything. And your name is?
Stephen.
Stephen, are you from around here, Stephen?
I am.
What sort of thing do you do these days?
I'm an architect.
Architect? You build things?
Not as much as I'd like to.
Okay, all right.
Things could be better.
Get you some work, maybe. One good reason you should play this quiz, Steve.
Because we forgot it was the 7th, and we didn't realize it was the 7th until we heard you on the show. So we rushed down here not to miss it.
Oh, you raced to the car and came...
Raced to the car and drove like crazy people and got here. Just in.
Well, you must have passed up some crazy people to do that.
They were all going the other direction.
Okay. Apparently they heard it was the 7th. And they... All right, come on, Stephen. Come on up here. I got it. Stephen, he's fine, too. We're good. You know, we're a lot younger than we look, actually. Come on, Stephen. He raced down here, ladies and gentlemen. He deserves it. Have a seat there.
So your architecture, is it like homes or larger buildings, commercial buildings? Pull up there if you would. Pull in.
Yeah. We do all kinds of things.
Yeah.
We've done car dealerships all over the country. But, you know, I mean, architecture...
How do you design a car dealership? Aren't they pretty much the buildings with cars in front of them?
You go there and you look at what they've got and what they need and figure out what the difference is.
Yeah. Have you done some innovative car dealerships?
Well, everything I do is kind of innovative.
Yeah. How about a Ziggurat?
I don't know what that is.
Ziggurat, those spirals they had in Babylon or whatever, you know.
You heard the story about the back steps up there for the priest, didn't you?
No.
Yeah. They'd take the virgin up the front part, the priest would go up the back part.
Yeah.
She'd see God.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you raced down here on I-65 so you could share that with us. You know how this quiz works now. Someone out there calls and plays along with you. Jim Packard, how do they do that?
This is an encore performance of What Do You Know, so save that trivial knowledge for our next live show.
Here's the question. How many items could you buy at Dollar General with the net worth of the owner, Cal Turner Jr.? Within how many? Within a million, Jim? Or?
Within a million.
Okay. Within a million. So this, how many dollar items you could get if you had if you actually had the net worth of the man who runs the thing? We'll take calls right now, won't we, Jim?
We will indeed.
You gave the number, didn't you?
I did.
Okay, then. Hi, Peggy. How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Is this Peggy, Peggy?
It is. It's Peggy, Peggy.
How are you doing? Good. I haven't heard from you for a while here. You got a show going on, I guess, don't you?
Oh, I do. I've got a show. It's the Belcourt. I sure do.
Belcourt, yes. She's a painter, and she does a lot of these buildings that are disappearing from Nashville, and she paints them before they do. And so check that out at the Belcourt coming up. Peggy.
Yes.
How many items could you buy at the Dollar General with the net worth of the owner, Cal Turner Jr.?
Let me think. He owns one of my paintings. I wish I could get him on the phone right now and see what his net worth is.
He might not share that with you, but you never
know.
It's quite a bit. It's quite a bit.
I'd say maybe about $4 million. That's not enough.
No. No. You're way off, Peggy.
Yeah, no, I won't be.
Yeah.
Oh, y'all sound so close. It's good to hear you.
All right. Thanks, Peggy. Bye.
Oh, bye.
Sorry. John's on the line from Charleston, West Virginia. John.
Hey there.
How you doing?
I'm doing great today. How are you, Michael?
Good. So we're looking at how many dollars, I guess, this guy has, and how many items you could buy with those.
Right.
You want to take a stab at it?
I'll give you
a hint.
Sure.
It's a lot.
Okay. How about maybe 296 million items?
No, that's paltry. He wouldn't even make the list with those few items.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. Okay. I didn't mean to criticize you, John. Okay. I'm sorry.
You felt bad about that, yeah.
Hi. Oh, sorry. I was still talking to him. It felt even worse now. Hi, who's this? Scott, are you there?
Yes.
In Milwaukee.
Yes.
You got an answer for this? I guess we're looking at the net worth, really, and he owns the Dollar General, so you could get a lot of items at a dollar each.
Let's try 840 million.
Low. Thanks, Scott.
You.
Bye. Diane's online from Summertown, Tennessee. Hey, Diane. Hi, Diane.
Hi, how you doing?
There you are. Hi, what a nice voice you have.
Thank you very much.
We should talk sometime. Wouldn't that be about anything? Really?
I listen to you quite a bit, so...
You do? You hear me, but I don't hear you, Diane, and that's what I need, frankly.
I can hear everybody laughing.
Diane, how many items could you buy with the net worth of the owner of Dollar General?
A billion.
Can we round?
We can accept that, Michael.
Okay, we could actually get a billion and 200 million. So you don't want to shortchange? Yes, but that's very good. Thank you, Diane.
You're welcome.
That's a lot of items. But they got it all there. You wouldn't want for anything at that point. Diane, what are you doing these days in summertime?
I'm retired.
What'd you retire from?
Oh, I was a nurse.
Okay. Are you enjoying your retirement?
Oh, yes.
Oh, excellent.
Do a lot of gardening.
A lot of gardening. Excellent. Diane, Stephen?
Hey, Diane.
Hey, Stephen.
He's an architect.
All right.
Okay.
Want to build something?
How about a ziggurat? Because, you know, you go up, the priest goes up one side. All right, never mind. The two of you work together as a team. What are those categories, Jim?
Categories Packer? Of current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science or odds and ends.
Diane, pick the first one if you like.
Odds and ends.
Odds and ends could be anything. Yes, it is. In terms of how old your body thinks it is, if you can get that concept, how old your body thinks it is, where do people's bodies think they're older? In Knoxville or Nashville?
I think
Knoxville.
Knoxville is Diane's guess.
I would think that because Knoxville is hilly, they might feel younger there.
Oh.
That Nashville might be the place where we'd feel older. The audience doesn't like
that. No, they
that
didn't
answer.
Like it. They didn't like it. They're still reeling from your ziggurat. So you're going to go with the Knoxville?
Yes.
That Knoxville is right. Yes, they're number 50. Nashville's 48, so there's a big difference, as you can see.
One right, no wrong.
What's left there, Jimmy?
Current events, people, places, school, or science?
Stephen?
Science.
Science it is. Vanderbilt researchers have located the autopilot in the brain that controls one of the following. Is it answering your wife? When she says something to you, sleeping when you turn on your stomach, you know, the stomach, the sleeping response when you turn onto your stomach, or typing?
Typing?
Typing is right, yes. Good insights there.
Two right, no wrong.
Oh, boy, you're on a roll. Oh, Diane, unless you object to that.
No, that's fine.
Yeah, okay. They found the Center for Typing, Jim. It's in there.
Indeed.
What's left there, Jimmy?
Current events, people, places, school.
Diane?
Current events.
Current events, right out of the news. Yes, it is. Who was last seen climbing Mount Kilimanjaro? Local celebrity. Former local celebrity. Well-known former local celebrity. Latest challenge is climbing Mount Kilimanjaro. Please, 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 please.
I don't know.
You don't know?
I have no idea.
Okay. Yes, but you're not on the quiz, are you?
Jeff Fisher?
Yeah. I'm afraid we can't let him have that.
Can't let him have it.
Former Titans coach Jeff Fisher is now climbing Kilimanjaro.
Okay.
And good luck with that, too. All right.
So we're two right and one wrong.
Oh, don't worry about it. What's this one, Jim?
People, places, school.
Okay. Is it back to...
I think it's Diane.
No.
Diane?
It's yours.
It's yours.
School.
School, okay. All right. Le Parolin à Jean Gris is French, you know. It's a bird, but around these parts, it's known as the what warbler? Over in France, it's called Le Parolin à Jean Gris.
Warbler.
Around Nashville.
Yellow
warbler? It's known as the what warbler?
Yellow warbler?
In Nashville, what's this warbler called?
Mm.
Warbler that can be seen in other parts of the world too, but was first seen around here. This warbler was. name of a place, warbler.
Ah.
First seen around these parts. 1817 or something, I think it was. That far back, around these parts.
Now, if it were a pileated woodpecker, I'd know about that.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure you would. No. Yeah. warbler, the blank warbler, name of a place where the warbler was first seen around here, pretty close around here. Not too far from here, just...
A Murfreesboro warbler?
Diana, help us out here now. It was seen, you know, this... Well, we're in Nashville right now.
Nashville
and I'm saying... I'm sorry?
Nashville Warbler?
Yes, the Nashville Warbler! Wonderful!
wonderful.
They have one. And for you, Diane, your sweet tooth will thrill to a plethora of dark and milk chocolate toffees and whole nut barks in the Chocolate Lover's Grand Package from Christine and George at the Nashville Toffee Company. Whip up some batches of biscuits with a biscuit goodie basket and make biscuits not wore a hat from the Loveless Cafe Hams and Jams Country Market. Prepare the rest of dinner using a Logic Chef skillet and a skillet cookbook from Lodge Cast Iron, America's original cookware since 1896. Write it down using an array of Sharpie pens and markers from Newell Rubbermaid. Stephen, for you, you're going out to dinner and a play with VIP tickets to the Barn Dinner Theater, Great Plays and Buffets since 1967. For dessert, enjoy an extravagant Tennessee cheesecake from the Tennessee Cheesecake Company, a tradition of excellence since 1981. Find something to accent your lifestyle or any room in your house with a certificate from the Beveled Edge, custom framing and unique gifts, serving Nashville since 1983. Read about some special needs animals and living with rescues, life lessons and inspirations from local author Sharon Langford, and discover the perfect taste of Tennessee with a selection of Pick Tennessee products from the Tennessee Department of Agriculture. Congratulations to both of you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks, Jim. You've heard me talk about a Prince's Hot Chicken Shack. It is unique. It's uniquely Nashville. It's nowhere else. We've got Andre Prince with us right here. Hi, how are you, dear?
Hi.
Thank you so much for coming. I know you're busy and you're working till what, 5 in the morning?
I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah.
Glory.
The story behind this chicken now, was your dad who invented the chicken?
My great uncle.
Your great uncle.
Martin Prince.
Yes. And it was revenge of his wife, wasn't it? Is that how?
Well, that's the rumor, as the rumor goes.
Yeah.
They didn't keep records back then.
No. But what was the story there?
Well, as the rumor goes,
yeah.
My great uncle, Thornton Prince, was terribly good looking. I do remember that as a child. Tall, dark, handsome, a womanizer. Well, as the story goes, or as the rumor goes, he had been philandering all night, romancing. Mm-hmm. And it was on a late Saturday night, and evidently, after the final act was over, he must have fallen asleep. And he got home in the wee hours of the morning when the sun had come up. The lady friend he lived with was very angry. In the colored neighborhood, as we were called back then, on Sunday morning, breakfast was a feast. And along with the traditional trimmings, we would always have fried chicken and fried fish, fried corn. It was just like a dinner breakfast. Mm. And everybody looked forward to it. So as an act of revenge, she dosed something on his chicken.
She dosed his chicken.
As he sat down for breakfast. And I'm sure after the initial shock, he liked it. He liked his punishment. So he told his friends about it, and he asked her to fix some more. And the rest is history.
The result is Prince's Hot Chicken. Now, this is...
But I give credit to the scorned woman. She's the one that really started.
That's right. And I'm going to try some here. I've never had it. I'm very excited about it. It is really hot. I know.
Well, I want you to know that the chicken here is mild. We marinate our chicken, and the longer it's marinated, the hotter it gets. So we have a lot of different responses.
Mm.
But I want you to know, women
love it.
Are the ones that get it consistently hot. I don't know why, but the men will try it.
Oh.
But they'll easily come down. But this is mild, so mild is just what it says, mild.
Mild is hot. So I don't know what hot is, but it sneaks up on you afterwards.
Our next live shows in Madison begin on Saturday, April 6th at Monona Terrace. For a full show schedule and ticket information, click over to notmuch.com or call 608-262-2201. Wish you could enjoy What Do You Know every day? You can. Click over to notmuch.com. You'll be able to join our Facebook family, play the brand new online quiz, or laugh throughout the week with Michael's tweets. It's all there for you in one place at notmuch.com. Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced at Wisconsin Public Radio for Public Radio International. Michael Feldman, producer international. Adam Friedrich, producer, with assistance from Michelle Good, Lyle Anderson, Martin Babcock, and Diana Cook. Technical director Tom Blaine, with help from Brad Kohlberg and Aubrey Ralph. I'm Sarah Nix, hoping you'll join us next week for more of Michael Feldman's What Do You Know.
PRI, Public Radio International.